Welcome back to another episode of Forgotten Seasons. This is your host, Dylan Dreyfus. Man, today we got a guy that I think really epitomizes what this show is all about, Josh Smith. Jay Smoove went straight from high school to the league in 2004. He was a part of a stacked 04 high school class, which included guys like Dwight Howard, J.R. Smith, Al Jefferson, Sebastian Telfair, all of who went straight from high school to the league. Smith was drafted in the first round by his hometown Atlanta Hawks, and he joined one of the worst teams in NBA history. My co-host Jelani McCoy was a part of this 2005 Hawks team. They went 13-69, which is one of the 10 worst seasons in the modern NBA. The team did have talent, though. I mean, they had guys like Antoine Walker, Al Harrington, Ty Lue, Boris Diaw, and Josh Smith. And if you remember, Smith was putting up ridiculous defensive numbers in his first 3 or 4 years in the league, having 100 steal and 200 block seasons, stuff that only guys like David Robinson and Hakeem Olajuwon have done. Smith has a really interesting perspective just on how his career panned out. You'll hear him talk about how he even had trouble like going to basketball games or watching games on TV after he retired. So I thought that this was a really good one. I hope you guys enjoy. A reminder, we are dropping episodes every single Wednesday. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on TikTok, on Instagram. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to drop a review and a rating. We really appreciate it. Let's get into the interview. Forgotten Seasons with Josh Smith begins right now.
Only thing unplugged is Forgotten Seasons.
Welcome back to Forgotten Seasons. Today we got a good one, Jelani, man. Fun fact, when I started Forgotten Seasons like 4 years ago, the very first post that I made was Josh Smith, because I think that this dude is one of the most slept on defenders, versatile players of the 2000s. And today we're lucky enough to have him in the recording room. Jay Smoove, how you living today, man?
Jay Smoove.
What's up, man? I'm living good, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I think this is going to be an especially good one because, Smoove, you had the pleasure of playing for a drink of water with my burnt out co-host in Atlanta. So I think this will be especially good.
Yeah, man. Definitely was a great teammate of mine. Too brief, if you ask me, but definitely was a good guy, for sure.
I appreciate that. I felt the same way. I knew Josh was like reminding me of myself. So I did what I could while I was there to make sure, you know, he was in a better position. You know what I mean? As a young player coming into a tough situation. So the talent was undeniable. When you seen Josh Smith, you realize you didn't have to be even like basketball to understand that he was good at whatever he was doing. So, you know what I mean? Hats off to him as a young fella in his career. And I'm excited about this one, Dylan, because at least it's not that everybody isn't the homie, but you know what I mean? I at least got, like you said, I had a little time cut short, but I spent some time with Josh.
So before we get into the Hawks thing, I want to kind of start in high school. We've been posting about it a lot, just like the high school to NBA pipeline. And I think that your high school class, when you look at it, like talent-wise, that top 10, 15, I don't know how many classes rival that in terms of talent. To go down the list, it's Dwight Howard, Sean Livingston, Al Jefferson, Rudy Gay, yourself, Marvin Williams, Sebastian Telfair, Randolph Morris, J.R. Smith. And if we remember, so this is the class of 2004. The year before that, LeBron goes to the league. And then what I assume happens is people see that and it goes really well. In your class, like five of the top seven guys end up going to the league. You are one of them. What do you just like remember from coming up with that class? Any memorable like games, rivalries? I want to talk about your AAU team, but talk to us just about that like high school to NBA pipeline and how it got to the point where like pretty much all five of the top players went straight from high school to the league.
We for sure did. We had a hell of a class for sure. You know, we played in the era where, you know, if you was a really good player, you didn't play your age group. So, you know, this new era of playing, you know, 15U, 16U, and then 17U, It's kind of strange to me. I'm trying to get accustomed to it, but you know, I think after 15, I just started playing 18. So I think it kind of got me mentally and physically prepared for the leaps and bounds that I was going to need to make going from high school to the NBA, getting beat up by guys like Kendrick Perkins and Leon Poe, LeBron James, guys that were older than me, and you know, me understanding or trying to figure out, you know, how can I be able to, you know, compete with these guys one day. And that was a drive that added a fuel to the fire in itself. So you know, playing older guys, it kind of definitely got me ready.
Josh, I know you played against older players. Were you always tall? Did you have a big growth spurt? Were you always, you know what I mean, tall for your age and always had to play against the older guys? Or did you have a, you know, started off normal size, got beat up, and then grew into, you know what I mean, six, whatever?
Yeah, I was kind of normal size. Well, I was a little taller than my friends, but, you know, basketball-wise, I was kind of average height. Mm-hmm. All the way up until probably like the ninth grade. Mm-hmm. I think from eighth grade to ninth grade, that was my biggest growth spurt. I went from like 6 feet, 6'1", to like 6'6".
I did the same thing.
When I was in ninth. So it was like, that was a big adjustment for me to when I got that tall. My athleticism just kept growing and going. So I used that as a staple point when I was younger, to be able to compete with those guys using my athleticism, my quickness. And, you know, you gotta have IQ, especially to be able to play, older, you know what I'm saying? As a young kid.
Talk to us about the Atlanta Celtics. I can't imagine like rolling up to an AU game and seeing you and Dwight Howard as like the front line. Like, could you just smell and see the fear in the players when they pulled up? Were any of the games close? I know that Brandon Rush, Javaris Crittenton, I think Randolph Morris was also on that team. Some people think that is the best AU team ever. I don't know where you stand on that, but what was your AU experience like? Because Jelani and I were talking yesterday. He played on a really good AU team and I think had a similar experience to you, but me as a 5'11" white dude, I know that if I pulled up to that game and I saw you and Dwight punching in layup lines, like, I don't know how I'm gonna do this game.
I mean, we're definitely up there in conversation, you know. If you ask anybody that was in on the AAU teams back in the day, they'll say they had the mm-hmm. best ones in the history. So we're definitely up there, but we were so humble back in the day. You know, you got to think about it. Wasn't no Instagram, and guys wasn't really bumping into NBA players how freely they do now. So it was like, you know, we were just kids. You know, we were just kids, not even really understanding what we were doing in that moment. We seen, you know, the crowd was definitely packed, but we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know why they was there for us. Our coaches did a great job at keeping us humble. Rest in peace, Coach Prather, and you know, Carl McRae is still alive, but he did a great job. They both did a great job at keeping us eyes on the prize, you know. So we definitely had a really good program. We still have it today. I'm involved with the Atlanta Celtics, and they still have a good pipeline in Atlanta and around Georgia, and getting great players and pushing them to the NBA and into high level colleges. Mm.
So then how does you going from AAU in the high school scene get to the NBA? Is that mostly because of Oak Hill? Cause you end up going there, and is that when the NBA attention and the scouts and the coaches start talking to you, or was that a thing before you even went to Oak Hill? And what do you remember from those like first NBA scouts talking to you and finding out that you could actually be in the NBA? Because you're 17, 18 years old, and now you got grown men coming to you and, you know, asking you. I mean, what did they ask you, and what do you remember from that?
Those want some from you.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to thank my parents. I mean, I had really good – my mom and dad did a great job at keeping my vision tunneled. And you know, kind of blocking out the noise on people that was trying to get in the pot. You know what I mean? You know, everybody sees and they see it, and they want to be a part of it, right? Jelani, you know, you know it, and it's just about having a great support system around you, kind of like, you know, being that voice for you to say no, and kind of narrowing your vision and staying focused on the prize at hand, because you can get distracted. And I think Oak Hill did a great job, because it was nothing up there but books and basketball. Mm-hmm. And we were playing nothing but the best talent around the world. And I'm not, no knock to public schools or anything like that, but if you want to like make it and you're trying to like merge quickly into that professionalism, a school like Oak Hill is great for a kid. It blocks out so many distractions. The only thing you can do is talk to a girl on the phone. So it's like, you know, you could just, it's just books and basketball, and you know, building your game up to being able to play at the next level.
Mm. Well, for both of you,
you don't hear a lot of people talk about what goes on at Oak Hill and Mouth of Wilson. You know, I know it's in the middle, yeah, kind of nowhere. Everybody always wonder, like, what exactly do they do there? Because they don't play a regular high school schedule. They always traveling. Mm-hmm. Like, it definitely is a introduction in how to be a professional player, almost more so than a college player, because, you know, like, you really taking your brand on the road and traveling and not really playing in a conference, or y'all really playing for national championships, right? At the end of the day, at Oak Hill, there's no league champion or Harbor League or independent league.
Like, yep.
Y'all thing is to be, you know, the national championship at the high school career. So I always thought it was very interesting. Like, man, nobody ever really talks about it. You know what I mean? They always say that, you know, there obviously aren't girls there, but I always commend y'all for holding that.
No, they have girls that you just, it's like an invisible line. You just can't cross that invisible line.
See, that's what I'm saying. Everybody,
it's co-ed. You just,
you got to be a co-op mission to do it. It really got to be a job if you want to find out.
But it ain't even worth it, because you get
kicked out for crossing talking to a girl.
At a certain time, for sure. You know, you could talk to them during the school. We have like little stuff that we have, like activities on weekends sometimes, where, you know, but it's like an invisible line. Once the activity is over, y'all go over there. They're over there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
Everyone says the same exact thing about Oak Hill, dating back to, like, we talked to Rod Strickland, who was like the first player to go there. Steven Jackson says that every single player that goes to Oak Hill says the same thing. What's your Coach Smith story? Because Steve Smith is probably one of the most, like, you know, probably underground legendary coaches. I think he just retired, but what makes him such a good coach?
Yeah, because
every single player that goes through that program says the same thing about him, is that, you know, dude's an amazing coach, and he stayed at that school for his pretty much, you know, whole career.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say his how well he does with juggling all those different personalities each and every year. Having to have guys come in top five in the country, top 15 in the country, and being able to manage those personalities and get them to play at the highest level. You know, being able to be away from home. I think Miss Smith did a great job at making it feel home. I was, you know, people get homesick, and you know, even though your parents come up there, you do want to be at home, you know, at that age. But they did a great job at keeping us focused. We won a national championship our year, me and Rondo and our team. And you know, it's a place where you want to leave when you're there. Like, you want to leave because you miss home, but when you leave, you appreciate those moments, and you miss being up there. If that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
It taught me a lot. It made me a man quickly in those, what, 6-7 months I was up there. I gained friends that I still talk to today, teammates that I still talk to today. We have a little group text message where we check up on each other, and I find that so dope that we're able to stay connected that long. And Oak Hill is a place where, you know, it's underrated still to this day, because you have a lot of these other prep schools that are coming out, like IMG and Mount Verde and they're in these dope locations. And you know, a mouth of Wilson doesn't sound as attractive as going out to a Mount Bird seeing palm trees, but it builds a different type of character when you go up there. I can say that for sure.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can I say something? As a person who went to college, I think the community of Oak Hill is stronger than some of the community and alumni associations in college, bro. So even though you didn't get to the college experience of the Duke and the North Carolina, the Kansas, you know, the whole humdrum, the Oak Hill bond is much stronger than a lot of the blue bloods or, you know, a lot of the successful college programs. So even though you missed college, you really didn't, because as a person who went to college, we always talk about the brotherhood and the stories from our college teams. And you already got that in 6 to 7 months in Oak Hill. So it makes sense to me why you would jettison into the NBA, you know what I mean? Because you got what you needed, fortified with some guys, you know, that are already like-minded. So it speaks to Coach Smith, you know, mouth of Wilson, Virginia, the whole Oak Hill spot, because, you know, that you felt confident enough and you had some information with people who had already done it to make that jump. I mean, it really makes, you know, thinking about why do guys come out of high school, but when I think about you at Oak Hill and listening to you, it kind of makes good sense to why you would make a jump to high school. And yeah.
So just segueing to the NBA, so 2004 draft, you go in the first round. And I think people are always so concerned about like the on-court, what happens on-court. But what I'm interested in is like, I mean, you're an 18-year-old kid staying home. You get drafted by the Hawks. You're from Atlanta. And the Hawks, like the team is horrible. And Jelani's there too. But it's one of the record-wise worst teams of the 2000s. There was a lot of talent there. I mean, you got guys like Antoine Walker, Al Harrington, Kenny Anderson, Josh Childress, Ty Lue. So there's a lot of like
Tony Doug.
There's a lot of talent there, but like, what is that feeling like going into the league? You enter the league and you're home. I'm sure there's a lot of friends and family trying to come see you, but like the team is horrible. Like, what is that? Like, what do you remember just from those like first weeks or month with the Hawks where it's your entrance to the league, you're at home, like it's supposed to be like this beautiful thing, but on the court, like, I mean, I think you lose like your last like 32 of 35 games or something like that. Like, what is that? What was just that entrance to the league like for you?
13-69. Yep. I think it was like 13-69. Yep. I think we ended the year. man, from a winning standpoint, it was tough. It was definitely tough, but you got to take an effect. I was 18 and I'm living out my dream right now. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'll take the 13-69 for right now. You know what I mean? I'm happy the commissioner called my name. So, it was an experience. It was definitely an experience. It was a learning experience. Antoine Walker took me under his wing when I first got in. He was a great vet, man. It was a great example of a vet that showed you things that you should be able to, that you should apply to your game, and some things that you should just leave on to, let him have it for his journey. You know what I mean? So, but he was great, man. And that's what I think is a lost art in today's game is the veteran. They helped me kind of maturity-wise, close that gap You know what I'm saying? Because you got to think about it. I'm a kid. So I'm a kid around a whole bunch of grown-ass men. You know what I mean? So I want to play around and joke off. And I'm not understanding the magnitude of we're losing and shit's not funny. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I had to, like, understand and learn those things as a young professional. You know what I'm saying? And then when I came in the game, it wasn't all this dressed like a hip-hop rapper or, you know, coming to gym with jogging pants on. Like, the veteran would get on your ass so quick, man, and make you feel like you'll be so embarrassed that you, like, you looking down at your sweatpants like you ashamed, like you done disappointed your dad. You know what I mean? So
you know what it was? You had to go get them Willis and Walkers with the blazer, with the little Gucci shoe.
Remember we had the wide
at the bottom with the little
Couldn't
Gucci shoe.
Couldn't even see the shoes because the jeans were so wide.
With the blazer and the like. You already know. And we did it. And that was Kevin Willis's. Yeah. That was, as we speaking about veterans, Kevin Willis, one of the old heads in the locker room, he had a jean company called Willis and Walker. It was out of Atlanta. So, I mean,
last year, that was his whole purpose. His whole purpose was getting his brand around the NBA.
Dudes brought like 20 pair. Like, sure, OG.
Everybody was showing love.
Come on, man. With the little shoes. Big jeans, wide bottom, with little shoes, with the jacket.
Yes.
My bad. I just remembered that. I had to bring that up.
But things like that, man. I would have to credit the veterans. You know what I'm saying? The veterans helped me understand the game. Now, is each and every organization different? Yes. You know what I'm saying? It's like dating. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you think every female is the same when you're in this long term relationship, and then, you know, things may fall out, and then boom, you meet the other girl, and be like, hold on, man, this one's a little better. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like understanding things and being okay and understanding, knowing that it's a business. Like, when you step into the professional realms, it's a business. So, you know, emotions have to be kind of left to the side. No matter what they show you or how they make you feel, you got to understand in the back of your head, it's a business.
Jelani,
how long did it take you in the league before you realized that? How many years?
You think? How many years? Yeah. I say when I thought I was supposed to be an all-star and I wasn't.
And that's when it really sunk in?
Yeah, that's when it really sunk in. That, and I'm going to have to say, well, I wouldn't even say that was my first one. I say when I was re-signing with Dawgs and I was a restricted free agent, that's when I knew
it was
a business.
What year was that?
Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out.
Was that your first deal after the rookie deal?
My first deal after my rookie deal. Mm-hmm. So it might have been, I want to say, 2009,
and
maybe.
This is fresh off. This is fresh off two seasons where you have 100 steals and 200 blocks in a season. You're the only player other than Kirilenko, Ewing, Ben Wallace, David Robinson, and Hakeem Olajuwon to do that multiple times.
Crazy.
So you do that in like year three or four.
Did you know that?
I had no idea. He shot that stat out to me. When did we have a conversation? A yeah, about a week ago. I had no idea. Smooth. I'm trying to figure out if my agent knew that going into the meeting. Maybe maybe he could have shot that out there. We would have got signed a little quicker.
So you thought you thought and like rightfully so that your play would have warranted like a bidding war because you're a restricted free agent, so teams can basically throw money and then it's on the Hawks to either match it or let you walk. And what happened? Just like the offers that you thought didn't come in, your agent was giving you information, and then you ended up settling with the Hawks?
No, I met a couple of teams. I met a couple of teams that year. I'm not going to say who because it's irrelevant now. But met with a couple of teams. They showed me a couple of offers. They showed me like an offer sheet. But they was kind of nervous to kind of like issue, like offer it to me because the Hawks was telling everybody they was going to match any deal. So that's, you know, that's what they do. They try to tell everybody around the league that they're going to match whatever.
Keep the number
they
down.
Might not even match it, but that's just going to put fear in people's hearts to even offer you the money. So a team has to really, really want you. And by the grace of God, Memphis offered me an offer sheet and I signed it. And I had to say less than a minute later, they
once you get that one, the real
they picked
the real,
it up, man. The real
agents know. Yeah, they'll call a team that they ain't cool with. They'd be like, I need you to make this. I need you to run it up. You know what I mean? So we can take it. So then I got you with two other players on the roster when we negotiate.
Absolutely.
That's the
game
within the game. Yep.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, my agents had an idea, had some increments that they was going to sign, but they did a great job at convincing Memphis to go ahead and do it, you know, to send the offer out. But they picked it up like that, like the Hawks picked it up as soon as I signed it. So it was like a conversation when, like, congratulations, you're coming back. And I was so stressed out during the process. I'm like, y'all could have offered me a little less than this, I would have signed it. But y'all, you know what I mean? Y'all were being unreasonable. You know what I mean? It was like super unreasonable. But things happen for a reason, and that opened my eyes to the league being big business.
Well, Josh, you're also coming on the heels of a lot of players going to high school not having success after that first deal.
Absolutely, right? You know,
there's,
yes.
There's the Josh Smiths of the world, and there's a couple of other players. Yeah. Not that it's their fault or I'm hating. There's a couple of stories where after that first 3 or 4 year deal, that second deal, people got a bag and didn't put up 100 and woo-dee-woo and be up there with Patrick Ewing and everything. So, like, that's part of what you learn when the business and you get older, but you know what I mean? But that was all the more the credit to you, because you could have easily been in the situation where after the first deal, you know, you lowballed, you're almost out of the league because it didn't pan out, but you had put yourself in a position to be, you know what I mean, one phone call away from, nah, we'll do it, you know what I mean? So that's only a happy creditor fault to you. Things that you don't realize when you're playing, you know what I mean? Like when you get older and you can become a little bit more wisdom, you're like, you know what I mean? I see what happened there. So I just like to remind players, because I've been there, not in a situation where you have, obviously, where, you know, there's tons and tons of money on the line, but having a good year and thinking you're supposed to get, you know, X amount, and I'm going to go right back. Yeah. I'll go for less. I just want to go back and be here for the next 3 years. And they don't know that. Your agent doesn't necessarily tell them that. It's their job not to tell them that you're comfortable taking less money, because then they get less money. So just in the tangled web of the stuff we do, I just like to remind players, you know, or ask them, do they think about those type of things, like, you know, when we're playing? Because really, when we're playing, we're playing.
I feel like we don't. Yeah. We don't, man. And it's okay not to, man. Be selfish in those moments. Mm-hmm. Like, we're young. We have a window. You know what I'm saying? So maximize the window that you see in front of you, and be selfish, man. Be selfish with everything, you know, because at the end of the day, when you get older, you're going to appreciate you giving yourself that opportunity to see all those things through. Because God doesn't give everybody the talent to play, to be able to be a professional athlete. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's whether you play in the NBA or you play overseas. You're a professional. So you have to be able to handle that gift accordingly, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the devil gives out all kind of distractions when you make it. You know, you have women, you have gambling, you have a lot of things, man.
You got
clubs, you got partying. So it's like gambling. You got everything. So it's at the end of the day, it's like, how can you minimize those distractions as a professional, especially when you obtained what you feel like is necessary to be cool for the rest of your life. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, be selfish in those moments of wanting to be the best player that you can be. You know what I mean? So when you get older, you can appreciate and value that you did that for yourself. You know, because, you know, as an athlete, that's probably the biggest thing and biggest fears that we face is just regret, mm-hmm. you know? Regret with, you know, certain decisions, you know? All those things that I named, you know, holding on to one of those things and it is taking the control of your life. So, you know, I don't think we think about that, you know, when you're younger, you're more emotional too. So it's kind of hard, like, especially when you invested so much time and emotion into an organization and you feel like they don't feel the same way. You know what I mean? So, a lot of that is like all of that kind of plays into the factors of the decisions that players make.
We know that the like money and women and gambling and drinking is like the obvious vices and distractions. Is there something that just caught you like totally, and for both of you, that caught you like totally off guard once you did make money and make the league, like, I got to worry about this too. Is there anything that like the common fan wouldn't really expect that is a common thread for athletes and people that make good money?
I can say this.
You want to go, Josh?
Yeah, I can say this, and then I want to know how Josh felt. And I've lost a lot of NBA players with different experiences, All Stars, Hall of Famers, the whole gamut. I can say this. And, you know, you could take this for what it's worth. I can say when I got to the NBA, I was disappointed. Just a little bit. The thing that I saw on television wasn't the thing that I was experiencing. What Josh talked about, the business side, you know, the game within the game, just even meeting some of your heroes and knowing their personalities and, like, you know what I mean? Like, huh?
Yeah.
You supposed to help me. You turning your back on me? Or you feeling some type of way because I'm young and I'm, you know what I mean? I was just a little disappointed. Not to where I caved. It was just a, huh?
Yeah.
The coaches, you know, learning the different dynamic of the coaches and the tangled web that they got and how they're trying to do the same thing we do to move chairs over. And just, it was just like, really? I thought we were supposed to hoop. There's a multitude of other things going on that I can't just hoop. And you know what I mean? I got family and a little bit of money and I'm living out my dream and I'm young and we can't just hoop. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's the part that disappointed me a little bit. And it took me back a little while. And I didn't have good vets. I had some veterans, but weren't the ones that I needed at the time for me to advance. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't as confident as Josh. Josh was confident. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was his parents or whether you call it bullheaded it or whatever. Josh was good at letting one go in one ear and out the other and understand, getting the message. I would take it and think about it before it went throughout the other ear. Josh came with whoop, 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 took the good, what he needed, and I'll let him finish. He could tell this story, but I just know because I saw in Josh, you know, athletic. He was smarter than you thought he was, basketball, IQ-wise, you know what I mean? So if you didn't talk to him the right way, he didn't need it. It's like, I learned this from Coach Smith to Oak Hill, homie. You know, I've already been a pro the last 6-7 months. So I'll let him speak to his miss. But mine was a little disappointment as to the other things that led to you not being able to play your best game.
Man, damn. That was definitely one of them, man. You summed it up. That and probably I had the vet that I needed. I needed Antoine Walker. Mm. If Antoine Walker wasn't on that team for that first half of the year, I didn't know how it would. I don't know, because you know I had Kevin Willis. He was fucking with me the whole time, but he was a good dude though. But he was old fashioned. Like, I gotta mess with this. I gotta mess with this rook. I have to mess with him.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Which what was okay.
Like take the bags, donuts.
No. Just anything. Like it was different back then. Like it was a little bit more reckless then. Like taking the bags is easy. I couldn't wait to take the bags. Like, you want me to take the bags as a rookie? It was like messing with you type stuff. You know what I'm saying? But Antoine was teaching me the game. No disrespect to Al Harrington, but he was contract year, so he didn't have the time to show me. And that's what Jelani kind of is talking about when it comes to like the game within the game. Like, you know, we probably played the same mm-hmm. position, so he didn't have time to mm-hmm. show me how to take his mm-hmm. minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's gonna really do that unless they like on the way out of the league. You know what I'm saying? Like, and nobody's gonna try to tell a young guy how to maneuver and manipulate offenses and defenses and not gonna show you how to deal with everything. They're just gonna sit back and see how you handle it.
Was this before or after Antoine like went through what he went through? Was this, because you're saying
this is before? No, Antoine was having it. Antoine will come to the, he'll come to on the plane with $30,000 in his book bag.
Easy.
Like, and nobody's gambling. Like, nobody on the team was gambling that then. He was just whatever city we go to. Then he had like charity. He took care of people in Chicago. He had a lot of charity games and stuff like that. Where I met Michael Jordan for the first time playing softball at one of his events, and I'm just in awe. And
Twan cool. Big, the story, yeah, was a story. Your story is a story. Dude, but if you was his teammate,
yeah,
there wasn't nothing.
He was a teammate, man.
He'll pull Absolutely. Up. You could pull up to the crib. If he's shopping, you shopping. If he eating, you mm-hmm. eating. Like
if you need it, you need to borrow a car. He'll let you borrow for a month or two months. He wouldn't even ask for it back.
Facts.
I think Royale Ivy or one of my other teammates, or Dante Smith, who was
crazy legs.
Yeah, crazy legs. One of them two didn't have a car for like the first couple of months in the season. I think he gave one of his trucks. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So he was a guy like that. If you feel like you couldn't afford the suits, get you a couple of them. So I had to definitely say what Jelani said, and just these random people trying to be your friend. You know what I'm saying? Like, trying to figure out how they get access to these little places and these little venues that you have to be at, and they try to get up under you. So I think things like that too are probably the hardest kind of transitioning things that a young player has to deal with.
So going back real quick to the entrance to Atlanta, your arrival there coincides with Mike Woodson. There's a little bit of like an Indiana tie-in too. He went to Indiana. You were committed there, didn't end up going. And I mean, you got to give it to Woody in one sense that every year that he was there, the team did get better. I mean, that's what it seems like from the outside. But I know that maybe some people did have problems with you. What for both of you perspectives, having been there, like what was Woody as a coach like as your – you know, as a 19, 18-year-old coming in, and what paint that picture of what Mike Woodson was like.
For me, it was difficult. It was definitely difficult for me. I mean, see, people got to understand Woody came from the era of
Larry Brown,
Bobby Knight. You got Bobby Knight first. You got the chair thrower first,
mm-hmm.
and then you have Larry Brown, and the common denominator in both of those two is they didn't like young kids. They don't like young guys. They didn't like rookies. They didn't like freshmen in college. They didn't like none of that. So he definitely took that philosophy with him. So like you said, the game within the game. Mm-hmm. You can imagine a coach not really wanting to play a young kid and the organization is telling them to play mm-hmm. him. You know what I mean? Because of the excitement that I'm bringing to the game. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like me telling you to do something with your job, controlling in your mind what I want you to do, and you don't want to do it, but you have to. If you don't want to get fired, you're gonna kind of resent me a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna resent a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like the innocent bystander, not knowing what the hell is going on. You know what I mean? So it was like, you know, you're a kid and you see how like your coach is coaching other players versus how they're coaching you. You know what I mean? So like I'm not a sensitive guy, and I never was. So, but it was to the point where it was like, you got to talk to me like that a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just talk to me like this 100%. You got to talk to me how you talking to the other guys a little bit. And it never happened. So it was like a lot of headbutting because we were both strong-minded individuals. But we got better because we had a lot of great players that come on our team. You know what I mean? So I kind of feel like we didn't do what we should have done with the talent that we had. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to no coach that was in that position. But like you said, Jelani, we was in a position where we had like 9 owners at the time, and I think they was offering who would take the, I think it was like the less paid coach in the NBA, like who's gonna take this little money to be this head coach, mm-hmm. and he won, you know, and he was a first year coach and he took it, so if we had a really, really respectable coaching staff at the
season one. Coaching staff
at the time, because you know, we had a lot of talent, man. We had Joe Johnson, Jamal Crawford, who I think he got 6 man of the year 2 times for us. Mike Bibby,
Horford,
Kirk Heinrich, mm-hmm. Al Horford, Marvin Williams, like we had a lot of guys where it could have made sense where we could have went and did something really special, and you know it didn't work out like that. But you know, like I said, I wouldn't take nothing back from the experiences that I had. I was young. I was figuring it out, and like Jelani said, I did a great job at staying focused and being confident that. Confident in myself, you know what I'm saying? Because if I wasn't confident in myself, I can easily see how an 18-year-old could come in the league and just get
in the A, get washed from the A, playing in the A at 18, 19 years old. Stop it! Mm-hmm. You did a great job,
for sure.
Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. But yeah, we definitely had our disagreements. But I'm older now. I see things from a different lens now. And I'm a coach too now, but the thing that I took from that is I'll never leave a player broken. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I have to get on a player, I'm not just going to we're not going to not talk about it for 24 hours. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to call him. We're going to discuss it. I'm going to give him the reason why. And I'm a coach where it's fair game. I'm like a Popovich. So, like, I'm getting on my best player, so the 10th player on the bench can't complain when I get on him. You know what I mean? So everybody gets coached the same. But it is a different way I kind of do it because I know my players now. Mm-hmm. But they all know that I'm there for them and I want their best interest. That's all a player wants to know at the end of the day is if the coach is down with them 100%. Like, no matter what is going on in that moment, because we're mm-hmm. at war, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? We're battling. So anything can be said in the heat of the moment, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, as long as I know that you're down with mm-hmm. me, I won't take anything personally.
But that's what
you
players
know what I mean?
Want, right? Like, I feel like anybody wants to get coached. Anybody wants to get, you know, constructively coached. You're doing this wrong, do this. But if you're Absolutely. Not, you're saying if you're not also mm-hmm. at the same time knowing that that coach really likes you and like wants you to succeed as a person, I could see that how that could completely mess with your head, especially as a 21-year-old.
Yeah,
I was young, man. I was 18 when I had him.
And it's a given.
Said like 22, 23, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why did he show up at the game with no eyebrows? Did you ever get to the bottom of that? And is it true that you put, Ooh. Did you put the Velcro on him?
I put the Velcro on him. we was trying to get him right, man. We was trying to get him right. But he was a cigar smoker. So I think he had one of those flame cigars. Yeah, so I think he did one of them numbers like that. And
took them it
blew it on off.
Blew them Steve Harveys off.
it blew the reel was right on it off, man. So I tried to improvise for my dog, man. I tried to improvise for him.
That's crazy.
So is it fair to say, Josh, for as much as Woody was what he was in your relationship, coming from Indiana, being a hard ass old school coach, was there some moments in there that you guys were cool or did have a safe space to at least joke? Because I find it's funny, like both can be true. You can be beefing with a coach as a player, but agree with him as a person.
Absolutely. We definitely had moments like that. Absolutely. Yeah. We had moments like that. We definitely had moments like that. Man, we're around each other more than we are around our spouses and our kids. So, you know, you're gonna have friction days. You're gonna have days where you know everybody's getting along and kumbaya and we're agreeing. So definitely was some moments. It was some moments of joking. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I was more so of a like, I like to be with my teammates. You know what I'm saying? Like I was a teammate type of dude. So like, kind of like building a individual relationship with a coach. It was more so with my teammates because I had to be in the fire with them more so than with anybody else. So getting the chemistry, learning, and knowing my teammates in and out was more important to me than anything.
How was that All-Star Weekend experience your rookie year? You end up winning the dunk contest. If you go for the dunk contest, are you like kind of in your own silo or are you still like mingling and chilling with like the All-Stars?
I was in my own world. Mm-hmm. I had my partner, my best friend, Michael Cash. He went to UGA at the time. He flew out with another buddy of mine named Andy Gates. And we were just riding around, man. We was riding around. I think my agent was agents with Kenya Martin, so I was able to kick it with him a little bit. And I was able to get in a couple of little places with him, and it was a great experience, man. It was a great experience for me and my friends. And it was like one that I can remember each and every day like it was yesterday.
Facts.
It was a fun experience for me.
Jelani, you want to talk about what you saw him do in an empty gym?
I don't know if you remember, Josh, but after a practice in Atlanta one time, we had a dunk off. I think it was me, you, Chill. I don't know if it was Boris. For some reason, it was somebody in there that was in there that shouldn't have been there. It was definitely Crazy Leg. It was me, you, Crazy Leg. And then I don't know if you remember, bro.
That's the one, though, man. I had to hit him with it. You know, I still be talking.
Tell him
to
I said what's up, man.
I got you.
Josh threw the ball off the floor, y'all. And he did like a modified windmill. I don't know whether it was the way he turned or something that he's did, his feet went up in the air. He went from like 6'9 to 6'5. It just looked like the sweetest shit ever. And then he did it, and everybody kind of like paused, and the ball bounced. Everybody was kind of like looked around like, what just happened? And I threw the ball to Josh. I was like, do it again. And he was like, what did I do? And I was like, man, that's what I thought. Thank God, because if he can just do that, you know what I mean? Repeatedly, I was like, there ain't no way, bro. I was like, if you could have seen what we saw, because everybody, it was like one of the moments in the league. You know, in the league, after practice, people start doing weird shit. I seen Vince Carter throw a chest pass the length of the basketball court after practice one time.
Mm-hmm. Dang.
And then he had everybody trying to do it. You know what I mean? That's what happens after practice. Yeah. You see crazy shit like that. And then everybody else like, hold on.
And all that. They get to put the little money down on it.
There ain't no way. If he can do it, I can do it. Put some money up, you know, and everybody huddle around. But that was one thing for Josh. But after I seen it, I was like, yeah, ain't nobody 6'9", his height, supposed to be doing that. Like, young fella going to be winning dunk contests and be all right. And sure enough, you know what I mean? Sure, coming down the line, that's what he was known for. And taking off with that left hand and doing stuff other people his size really wasn't doing. Josh was, he was in that wave where he was a power forward, but was he a power forward? Because he can dribble and guard different positions. He really should have been a small forward because the power forwards were all still, in his era, back to the basket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Timmy was stepping out and going off glass. KG was showing a little 15, but really he was playing the 3, the 4, the second team 5. If they brought in like a Strohmile or somebody that was lean and athletic, no freaky, Smooth would be doing that. So in this era, Jay Smooth is like a 1-5. Like, we've a unicorn.
Well, could you, did you, you're definitely like a versatile defender. Was there any type of player that, like, might have given you problems? Like, was it the small guard? Was it the super big post up guy? Or did you feel like, was there any Achilles heel to who you could guard?
Not when I really started to, like, watch the game of basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, watching it all day long, like, on my days off, watching different players, it wasn't really like once I really knew the game. It wasn't a player. I think I led. I don't know what year it was. Maybe 2 years. I led the league in like ISO percentages on like defensively, like not getting scored on. So it was like I studied it. But when I was younger, man, I mean, I was Gilbert Arenas. Off the pick and rolls, he was before those injuries. He was a blur with the ball, and was like the Steph Curry before Steph Curry, shooting the ball from almost half court. I say him, and I say Carmelo when I was younger, knowing how to like take that bump that he gives you and being able to like stay like
it'll close move
space
you.
Up still.
The bump, the mellow bump move will move you. It'll move you,
get you right on out of there. Yeah. It won't look like nothing but a move. You know what I mean?
Light, no offense. You end up all the way over at the other box. Like, what the hell? Yeah.
Facts. So guys like that, I say Zach Randolph, battling him. No, not more Zach Randolph. I mean, Zach Randolph. Battling him, it was, you'll be bruised, man, putting ice bags on that thing.
One more question about the dunk contest. Yeah, you beat Amari, and Jelani and I were talking. You can include yourself because I think, like, you really could. Give us your Mount Rushmore 4 big man dunkers of all time. So, got to be a 4 or 5. Who are the best 4 big man dunkers ever?
Sean Kemp.
Oh, wow. Sean Kemp is number one.
That's what I said.
The things that he did with.
He let you know.
Got on some Josh Smith.
His highlights is crazy.
Yeah.
And they let you do whatever you want back then. So you could point at people. You could, like, right.
Man.
You can hold your nuts. You know what I mean? You can
what about from Sixers? Dawkins. What's the. Dawkins. Got to go Dawkins. Mm-hmm. Got to put him on there. Mm-hmm. You said 4 and 5, right? Mm-hmm. I got to go Shaq.
Okay. Young Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
He was destroying the rim.
Orlando Shaq. You got to talk ridiculous. About that.
And I got to go Dwight Howard.
That's about who we had with Josh, and he didn't throw himself in there and make 5.
There we go. So I think snubs from that.
You know, I'm being humble. Bro, I'm being humble.
Yeah, I think you're the dunk against the dude on the Bobcats, Primo, where the sound of that dunk. I don't think I've ever heard. I think that might be the best sounding poster ever. Exploded.
I used to try to tear.
You ever
the rim
break
off.
A backboard or shatter a backboard? Break a rim.
I broke a rim, not a backboard, though. Never shattered a backboard.
So, winding down here, like you said, the Atlanta team, I don't think you guys never made it past round 2, right? You only got to round 2 there?
Nope. Yep, that was it.
Your first days of the playoffs, you take the Celtics, the 2008 Celtics that are still holding on to that ring. You take them to seven games. The Pachulia famous, the Game 7 speech after Game 6. What iteration of the Hawks do you feel like was the best team? And then was there a playoff series that you look back on and you feel like you really should have won?
I feel like, was it after we won, that's when we started picking up. I think when we got Bibby, Jamal Crawford, I think that was like Kirk Heinrich. We was like, I think we was for real that year, those years. And man, we had LeBron in the East, man. So it's like, you know, saying we should have won a series is kind of crazy to say. I'm mad to say I think we played Chicago.
Yep, and
we could have won that series, but it was a young Derrick Rose.
It was when you ran into unbelievable.
He was, I think, he had MVP or something like that. Yeah, he was MVP that year, so it was like, psh, come on, man. Like, what Mike supposed to do?
Mike did. Yeah,
so it was the times that I wish that we just didn't. I wish we'd put up a little bit more of a fight though in some of those. I think we lost five games to like Cleveland and like five to Chicago or something like
Orlando.
I feel like we lost to Orlando, but we caught them the next year. We beat them the next year.
I think
year
that was the end of Dwight.
So we got our lick back. We got our lick back with that. No, Dwight was there.
But that, I think he left. I think he left the year after that. I think that ended.
Oh yeah.
How good was Joe Johnson?
Yeah, we did really good. Really good. Really good, man. ISO Joe. I think by 85% of our offense was ran through Joe. So
for a very good reason. Joe Johnson, like 230, 240, man. People don't know. People just think he ain't look like he's strong.
He's
like,
big, man. Yeah. He was like one of them 300 soldiers.
Yeah.
He was like a 300 soldier. And he has to be one of my most clutch teammates ever. Game winners draw it up for him. He's gonna send the other team on for sure.
He did it a lot in Atlanta.
He did when he went to Brooklyn. He did it up there too a lot.
Yep.
So I mean a guy that you can't speed up, super smooth, ISO killer. Man, a guy that can get you a bucket in many different ways.
He like Jamal Mashburn without the microfracture surgery. If Jamal Mashburn can scoot around.
Oh, yeah, okay. Ball, yeah, that sounds about right there. Yeah,
and get to where he wanted to get to.
I like that comparison. Mm-hmm. I like that comparison.
Well, Smooth, this was dope, man. I think just closing out, like when you look back at your career and especially like your Atlanta tenure, doing what you did in your hometown in front of friends and family, like, you know, what is it, just like pride? Like, how proud are you of that? What feelings do you have now? Because I know Jelani and players talk about it. It's hard to kind of reflect back on your career. You definitely don't do it when you're in the midst of it. Are you in that mindset now where you're like completely at peace? Where do you kind of sit when you think about your, you know, 10 plus years of NBA service?
I'm thankful. I'm blessed. I'm definitely at peace with it. It took me a minute to get here. It was moments where I couldn't even go to basketball games. Cause it, you know, like you said, I was good at doing this, but when you get done, it's like,
you lose your superpower.
Yeah. You lose your superpower. So it's like all of the confidence going, like, so it's now it's like, damn, you thinking about, like, what did I do? What's going on? You know, you it's a lot of things that you want answered that you're never going to get answered. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to, like you said, you have to be at peace with everything. You know what I'm saying? And the most thing that was able to help me along the process is understanding the business. You know, as you get older, you understand, you become more business oriented and you think that way too. Mm-hmm. So I can't be nothing but blessed and thankful for the opportunities that I had. Man, a lot of guys don't even get to play 13 years in the league. So
damn near none.
Being able to stay that long out of high school, hearing Jay Billis say that I was going to be the biggest bust in my draft, to playing 13 years in the league, it's a blessing. And, when I look back at all the things that I've accomplished, I'm thankful. You know, I didn't get any All-Star nods. Might have got snubbed a couple of times, but like I said, everything happens for a reason. I have 4 kids, 3 beautiful sons, athletic, strong. I'm giving them an opportunity to make it so they can experience it and also be able to help guide them and to making better decisions at a young age than I did. When it came to just getting coached and understanding things from that aspect, you know what I mean? When you're young, you're trying to figure all that stuff out when you get to the league. Do they talk to you like this? How do guys get coached? What do they let you do? How much free time do you have? You know what I'm saying? So all these things are racing through a kid's mind when he first get in there. And and they definitely need guidance. You know what I'm saying? So, the veteran definitely helped me with that. So, but I'm good. And I'm blessed and thankful that I played the game so I can be able to pass it down to the players that's on my team and my kids.
Yeah, I want to put a pin in that, Josh. You know, welcome to the other side. It's a lot of bros that don't make it to this side and are still regretting going over regrets. And I should have made a left when I went right there. I should have never done this person like that. I wish this person was still in my life if I would have just been a little bit more communicative, present, whatever it is. And it's just, you know, when your career, you're one of the best basketball players to ever play basketball. And I feel like sometimes when our career don't end or they don't go on this trajectory as what a lot of people assume should be a slam dunk thing to happen, a lot of narratives get pushed and then guys just ride off into the sunset. We don't get a chance to meet who we ultimately are as a person. A lot of fans, teammates, players, coaches, if you want to get into coaching and, you know, want to be interviewing for a position or somebody wants to come in your program, sometimes people's vision of you are the last thing they saw of you on a basketball court, which is an ill mental space to be at the end of the day. So as a person who saw you as that 18 and 19-year-old and looking into your eyes now, we're all not perfect. We're all not supposed to be. But welcome to the other side, bro, because a lot of us, you've seen a lot of us who don't get to the other side and are still harping on the past and still got a lot of pain that they have to get over. Yeah. And, you know, maybe you still do. Maybe I still do. Maybe we all going to have our dark days. But, bro, it seems like to me you on the other side. And you're a person who deserves, who's gave enough of his life to basketball and made big time contributions where you should see the benefits. And if you want to be a coach, an analyst, invent a basketball product, whatever it is, like I'm here to just know that it's good to see people on the other side and they're healthy enough to expect what's on the other side. And you seem like you're there now. And I think that's what a lot of what Forgotten Seasons is about. Not only you hearing your stats about what you said about, like, we talked about that earlier and I didn't know that, but you need to know your contributions. You need to know your worth outside of basketball. There's only been 5,000 of us and you were one of the brightest stars of the 5,000. So it's my job and I feel like it's on me to depart that information upon the bros when we end the show, during the show. So like I said, as a person who's seen you at 18, 19 years old, it's good to see you on the other side. And I think the future, you're going to be surprised how bright your future is, you know, now that you stopped playing.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
No doubt.
Really appreciate y'all for having me on. Jelani, is really good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
I can't wait to call Crazy Legs and call him.
I'm going
to
get your number.
Shot it up with my dog.
Yeah, I'm going to get your number. Yeah. Maybe y'all get on a FaceTime or a call or something, but definitely tell Dante I sent
you. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, dog.
Thank you for your time, and we'll catch you next week.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.